2020 has been some year, and many of us are emerging from it, and we've all processed all of the things differently. If you're Wei Ko, founder of The Rake and Revolution Magazine, someone who's used to being on a plane or constantly on the move, this sudden jolt has been a time to think, to process, to reconsider, and reflect on what really matters. Yes, of course, he still loves his watches, but I've known Wei for quite some time. And behind every expletive-laden greeting we've shared, a thoughtful, caring, and philosophical person is now taking the time to share his thoughts, not over Instagram, not through a verbal vomit on a phone, but in writing. Yes, the lost art of writing. Do you remember that? There have been mammoth New Yorker-style pieces coming out from him lately, and it's been absolutely wonderful. Wei and I chat about how The Mandalorian is making us cry, his renewed love of the written word, and why he will continue to pull back the curtain in the watch world, and his unabashed hope for the future. It's Blammo Extra, and Wei Ko is back.
But the, you know, maybe the first thing I'd love to talk to you about is
please
The Mandalorian, right? And I don't know if you saw the season finale of season two.
Yeah, we'll do a little pause here. There's going to be spoilers for the finale of season two. If you don't want to hear it, I don't even know why you listen to Blammo, but go ahead.
So, like everyone else, I was starving for content, started to watch Mandalorian this year, and then became hooked on it, and then was watching every new episode as it came out, especially this season. And season two, The Rescue, which is... basically, Mando and his kind of motley crew of fellow soldiers are basically trapped on an Imperial starship, and it looks like the Dark Troopers, which are these
unbelievable
Terminators, like as troopers, right? I mean, they're just unbeatable, and they basically look like they're getting screwed, and then this one lone X-wing kind of flies in. And then this dude comes out of there, and the kind of anticipation about who this is crazy, right? And then you see this person in a dark cloak, and everyone's thinking, is this Luke Skywalker? Because he's wearing kind of the same outfit that he's wearing, right, in one of the films. And then you see a green lightsaber, right? And everyone starts losing their shit. And then you realize that green lightsaber is being wielded by a gloved hand, which, you know, like, because Luke is missing a hand, he's got a robotic hand, and you're like, oh my God. And then you get basically the equivalent of like the Vader scene in Rogue One, right? Where Vader comes in and just destroys everyone in the hallway. You get that scene, but with this figure. And then he comes in and he reveals himself to be Luke Skywalker. And the thing was, which was really strange for me, was when I was watching this and I was just bawling like a baby. I was crying my fucking ass off. And then when he reveals himself to be Skywalker, I was actually like apoplectic with shocks, but it was like tears of joy, right? Then I started to just check on YouTube because I kind of like these reactions, right? To see what people's reactions to this episode was. And universally, you have like, you know, grown men and women just like bawling their eyes out because they're so happy, right? It was amazing because like this finale actually gave you everything that you wanted, right? Like, because so many shows don't, like, you know, like for example, Game of Thrones, and I'll get into that in a second, but because they completely fucked up that last season, right? But Mandalorian like just delivered in such a huge way. And I realized that for me, the reason why I was crying and why I was so overjoyed, it was because that you have this incredible, you know, mythology that reinforces that good will prevail over evil, right? And I think in the context of this year, in the context of where we are as a society globally, the idea that good will prevail over evil was maybe in some ways a little bit lost, right? There was this almost kind of prevailing cynicism. And to see that in such a pure way, right, with this figure, this almost mythical, you know, like archetypal figure, this almost sort of like, you know, messiah figure coming back and reminding us like about all those values and that you can be a good dude, but a badass, and good will eventually prevail over evil. It was just so uplifting, right? And I think that, you know, we've gone through a period where everything had to be a bit cynical, right? You know, there was, you know, everything had to be a little bit sneery and a little bit like, oh, I'm too cool for me to believe in happy endings. And And it was, I use Game of Thrones as an example of this. I mean, I love Game of Thrones, right?
Yeah.
I have to, you know, sort of preface this by saying I'm a huge geek, right? So, but I love stuff like that. But they just completely fucked up that whole ending, right? And it's like, look, I understand that there's an issue related to incest here, but, you know, it's all good. I mean, you know, right? Because they get on really well as a couple. But the fact that it had to end so cynically, like the fact that Daenerys had to turn and go crazy, like Dark Phoenix kind of evil, that really bothered me. Like, why could you not just have ended that with a happy and beautiful idealistic ending where everyone like would be satisfied and you give the fans and myself as one of the fans everything that they wanted, which was just a great happy ending, which reinforces that good will prevail over evil. But you kind of like said, well, it will. But actually, a lot of good people will turn evil, and in the end, you're going to feel very empty and soulless. And that really bothered me. So that's why I love Mandalorian, and I think that's why we needed Mandalorian and that episode in particular in the context of 2020.
That's a really interesting perspective.
Just give people what they want, right? Just give them happiness. You know what I mean? And because I think that coming out of this, like into next year, which I'm going to, because I made so many proclamations because I had a shitty 2019 that 2020 was going to rock. So I'm going to creep into 21 with my eyes kind of downcast and with zero expectations, right? But nonetheless, you know, I think one of the things that I really hope we see is that people re-embracing, you know, optimism and happiness and edification and just being nice to each other. Like, that's what I would love to see from the world.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to help lead the charge, it'll definitely happen. I mean, because to zoom way out, you know, I'm sorry you had an awful 2019 and obviously a horrible 2020, but up until that and everything else that you've kind of set in a world specifically of menswear and watches, which let's be very blunt, it is elitist and, this is our club, not your club. It's kind of shrouded in false mystery and, you know, from Revolution to obviously The Rake, you've kind of sliced through that entire world, making it open, accessible, acceptable. And I mean, it was funny because it took me a long time to read this, but I finally got through your Patek chronograph, you know, encyclopedia, by the way. I mean, geez, but I was just like, man, I was like, I love that Wei is okay sharing all the information he has. And doesn't guard it and doesn't hide it and doesn't live in a snobby world. And even though that, like, you walk through that as everyone else does who wants to be and is in this industry, I've never, ever seen you, you know, close things off. And I think, you know, to jump back to the fact of like, well, you know, optimism, I'm going to try to do this. That's like you in a nutshell. And I think a lot of people may have some sort of false understanding based on other interactions with people that maybe it's a guy at a department store, maybe it's like communicating to people that menswear, classic menswear, watches, all of these things is available to anyone and everyone is, I mean, that's the hope and that's the excitement that everyone needs. I mean, it's funny, I to kind of top this off, I've been reading a lot of World War II books, just kind of trying to refresh myself of a time where the entire world more or less collectively was groaning, was just, sure. You know, and I was reading Masters of the Air, which is about the 8th Air Force and the history of the first, you know, real US Air Force. And they were talking about the, like, psychoanalyzing the previous soldiers. And they were like, you know, we're trying to find a Wei to motivate them to fight or to make them do it. And there was, you know, and at first they were like, well, what we're going to do is we're going to kind of show them this propaganda and the Nazis are evil. This is Wei before they discover, you know, Holocaust camps and stuff. And what they found out is that everyone that was fighting and everyone that like really cared, like all the soldiers that did it, they did it because they loved each other. They did it because they loved their families at home. They did it, you know, they would get up in the plane, the bombardiers, because they felt obligations to their comrades, their colleagues, their friends who are doing this with them. I mean, there's many horrible stories of issues where, you know, a guy is stuck in the bomber belly in the gunner and he can't get out and the plane's going down. And so the rest of the, you know, the the men go down to him and they died together. I mean, so it's this shared collecting. People were driven not by anger, not by hate, not by revenge, but by love and hope. I mean, that's the thing to zoom out from. And so like, that's you in a nutshell way. So I think you're going to be fine.
That's very kind of you. I think that's, you know, it's a lot of praise, but I don't think that's, you know, necessarily true. I think if you check with my mother, she'd be like, no, he's actually a fool. But you know, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that concept of brotherhood. Because one of the guys that, you know, we featured in The Rake this year, and one of the guys that I was very inspired by, is this really cool dude named Dr. Johnny Kim, right? And Dr. Johnny Kim is interesting on several levels. First, he's the first Asian American NASA astronaut, which I think, well, I think there was one person previously that was like half Asian, but he's, you know, a Korean American astronaut. But he's also a very interesting person. So he grew up in Santa Monica, I think, or, you know, in Los Angeles. And, you know, he had a very abusive father, right? Physically abusive father. And, and to the extent of which that his father was actually shot by the police because he was, you know, in this kind of violent, you know, situation where he could really have hurt someone. And the interesting thing for me is that a lot of times when people are the subject of abuse, right, they become abusers themselves, right? Like, it's, I guess the simplest, example would be if you take a dog and you're abusive to that dog, it's going to be some fearful and then hyper aggressive, right? And then, yeah. And it will attack, right? So
hurt people sort of mentality. But, yeah.
So instead of like him, you know, succumbing to that, you know, he felt this kind of desire to be a better person. And so he finds out about the US Navy SEALs, right? When he's 16 and then he just basically goes and trains himself. He was a water polo player and he gets, he goes to, the BUDS, right? I think that's what it's called. And he makes it through, which is amazing. And he becomes a SEAL, right? And then, you know, he gets deployed. He's also been trained both as a medic, a corpsman, which I think a lot of people have a misperception of because, they think that, well, he's not going to fight, right? But actually, you know, medics are fighting and then they're also saving people's lives. And I think it was interesting because his motivation to be a medic was he just wanted to be the person that was always selected to go on missions. He wanted to go on missions. And someone told him, well, the medic always goes, right? And he's like, And then strangely enough, once he was assigned to his team, they were all out on either a deployment. They were there on when they were building up towards the deployment. So they were out on exercise, kind of fine tuning everything. So he gets sent to sniper school. So he's a sniper as well, right? Which is quite extraordinary. Then he gets deployed and, you know, he does, I mean, he from the interviews I've seen, he's not a very he's the opposite of a boastful person. He's a very humble person, but he gets, you know, all these commendations and awards, right? For his bravery and his capacity to take care of his fellow soldiers. And then he, you know, gets a scholarship and he goes back to college and then he gets another scholarship and he goes to Harvard Medical School, right? So this is all before the age of 30. So he's been a Navy SEAL. He's gone to Harvard Medical School. He's now a doctor. And then he gets, he decides that he's going to apply to NASA and then he becomes an astronaut. So I think like somewhere in his early 30s, he's become a Navy SEAL, a Harvard trained doctor, and now he's a NASA astronaut, which I kind of imagine this is probably the one guy, if you're an Asian tiger mom, that you're like, no, he's okay. He's done well. And it's really sweet because he attributes a lot of his success to his mom, right? But the point that I was trying to make was he's got this very good interview with him and Jocko Willink, and he talks about brotherhood, and he talks about that being the primary motivation to fight or persevere or do anything. It's not for any grandiose concept, although of course, you know, it's important to care for your country and all that kind of thing, but it's for the guy that was beside him. And I found that to be very, very touching, right? You know, I think it's kind of like when people were thinking about, well, how can I benefit people throughout this pandemic? It's kind of like, you know, of course it's cool to try to raise money for bigger causes, but a lot of times it's just the guy on the street or your favorite restaurant. They're like, everyone's out of business. What can you do for them? Right. Mm-hmm. And which was, yeah, you know, that I guess the, you know, you're talking about the watch industry and I guess I agree that it's shrouded in mysticism, right? Basically, what the watch industry doesn't want the average guy to kind of realize is that watches
Want to hear the rest? The hot takes never stop over on Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/Blammo to hear this episode and many, many more episodes from the return of Sid Mashburn, the Sartorialist, and more. You get access to our private Slack group too, where we talk about this stuff nonstop with tons of other listeners. So check out patreon.com/Blammo, and we'll see you there.